Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9 here at .NET Fringe talking all things OSS. I'm pretty excited to be here with Ian Cooper. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, my friend. Doing
so
good.
Tell us a little bit about your project. It's called Brighter. Hold on, I got to say it right. Brighter.
Yeah.
Brighter.
For us Londoners. Yeah, so when we build a lead application, our preferred approach to it is that rather than having a facade, which is just say an abstract interface, we like to basically use the commands instead, use the command pan. And there's a really nice model where rather than just using concrete commands, you can use a pattern called a command dispatcher. And that kind of says, take your command, which consists of some arguments and methods you execute against those arguments, and split it into two parts, just the arguments and the method you execute against those arguments.
Okay.
What that does for you is it says, well, actually, then I can decouple the notion of issuing the command from who basically handles and receives it. And that's great for saying, I want to decouple from my web framework, so that if I might decide that web forms is no longer my preference, I can switch over to MVC instead.
Right.
And I've got very little code to move out of that particular endpoint somewhere else. We also, as a result of that, can have the feature we call a command processor. So it's another command-based kind of standard design pattern. What that does for us is it says, well, then maybe when I call this target handler, there are things I may want to do that we would say orthogonal. In other words, they are not the actual work we want to do, but they're just part of a general housekeeping and infrastructure. So a really good example is logging. We may want to log that we're calling this handler, log what actually the command looked like. So we can go and see in our logs, we call this handler at 6:15, and these are the parameters we passed it, and that's really going to help with debugging. Other classic ones are things like undo. Mm-hmm. And the ones we particularly like, which is kind of a sweet spot for us, are retry. So I'm calling the database, it fails, I'm going to retry for you.
Okay.
And one called circuit breaker, which says, hey, everyone's calling the database, and it doesn't seem to work. And so what we're going to do is we're going to say no one gets through for a period of time, and then we'll send one through as a kind of test. And if that one goes through, then we'll send everybody else through. And that's to avoid us flooding traffic to a service that essentially is doing badly.
So, for example, if you have any kind of service that's misbehaving, you can use Circuit Breaker to say, hey, let's just stop all the requests for a little bit. Instead of overwhelming the system with bad requests and bad I/O that's coming back, just wait.
Yeah, it's a really good book called Release It, which is kind of not really about releasing. It's about running systems in production in a very available way.
So tell us about your documentation site.
So we have a GitHub documentation site. On there, you can find a lot of the explanation about the patterns that we're using, command processor, command dispatcher. We talked about hexagonal architectures. That's our preferred layering style, but you can use it with any number of layered architectures that are around. We also talk there about what we call quality of service patterns, retry, circuit break, and we give you some references to the book Release It, so you can go and do some more digging yourself about those patterns and get some better understanding of how that works.
So what does this actually look like in code?
Okay, great. Good question. So we can show you, we can start with a really simple kind of model. So this is one of our examples you can get it to on the site, called just a simple hello world. Everyone starts with hello world, right? And I think the easy thing to show you here is just these kind of lines here. So above we've got some configuration of our command processor. But this kind of key line here says, once we've built this command processor, we're just going to send a command, and this command just has literally my name in it, to a handler. So that's my main method. And if I go and actually look at what my handler does for that, this is a really simple handler. We derive from a base class request handler. Now, it has an interface. You can go and build your own version of request handler if you really want to. That's your preference. But we provide a little bit of extra work in there. So you might just use our stuff unless you really know what you're doing.
Right.
And in the handler, we just say, well, what's the action we want to take when we get this command? So in this particular case, it's a very simple get started example. We say, hey, let's write something out to the console.
Right. Okay?
And that's just that separation between this is the handler and this is the command that we're sending, and we just use the command process to say, hey, you figure out who's going to handle that. And so in our configuration above, we have a little bit of configuration up here. We don't want to get too much in the configuration to get confusing, but you can see what we're doing is we're just registering in this registry here. We say, register that when you have one of these commands,
go to this
handler. And we can also register, we have a separation what we call a command and an event. So command says, you go to one handler. An event says, actually, I want to broadcast this to a number of people.
One's like a push and the other a pull.
And so you can actually, with a event, you can basically have multiple handlers registered for that item.
Okay.
Okay. Let me get a bit more sophisticated. So we have an example here, a tasks example, and that's more fully featured little application you can run. I wouldn't try and build a business on the basis of our task application, right. but it's a good example. And what you can see here is we've got a handle method again, and you can see we've got a command to add a task, and it's very straightforward. We're just basically beginning and ending a transaction, saving away to the database. That's, you know, boilerplate stuff. But you can see we've got some attributes on the handler here. And those attributes are what we talked about, providing these orthogonal services. Now, under the hood, all that's actually happening is these are handlers themselves. So we're building a chain of handlers, a pipeline. And each handler is going to call the next handler in turn. And the reason it's useful to have this kind of model is what we call a Russian doll model, is where essentially each handler calls the next handler in turn within its context of itself. So it's saying, OK, I'm going to call the next handler, and it's going to do its work, and then it'll return to me. And that lets us do things in those other handlers, like have an exception block. So we can say, hey, if this handler below me throws an exception, I can catch it and do something.
So anytime a command happens that's being handled, it might pass through an entire pipeline of things.
Right.
Okay.
So here we're doing some logging at the beginning. Then we do some validation. We say, is this command actually, you know, got all the attributes we expect? We could get rid of it beforehand if not. And then we do this one called use policy. Now, use policy is the really interesting one. We essentially have here just it's a string reference, but we have a couple of well-known names you can actually use, or you can just pick up your pass a string. Mm-hmm. We go and look up a policy, right? And that policy, we use a library called Poly. It's another open source project. And that lets you define, essentially, the action you should take on an exception being thrown. So I should better find, just bear with me a second, where we actually configure that. Let me just up the size on that a little bit to make life easier for everybody. Mm-hmm. And again, this is our registration, so it can be a little bit complex. And we have to have a certain amount of complexity in the setup because we want to try and prevent any dependency from us on particular libraries you might have, like an IOC container. Mm-hmm. One of the problems for people writing libraries is that, obviously, if I decide that I'm going to use a given IOC container to manage stuff, that's not going to work unless I start providing versions of my library that match the versions of releases of that IOC library. So we avoid all that model. We just say, actually, what we want you to do is build a handler factory and just give us instances of your handler when you request that. So we have a bit of complex setup. It's all in code, and once you're done, it's quite straightforward. It's well documented. But here you can see we've got some policies, and these are written in Poly. Mm-hmm. So this policy says wait and retry. This is our retry policy we're going to use. And we're going to say what happens is that each time around, we're just going to increment the amount of time we wait, so 50 milliseconds, 100 milliseconds, 150. So we'll retry three times at those intervals. And then eventually, it'll just retry the exception out if it fails in any one of those instances. Mm-hmm. But you know, in a lot of distributed systems, I mean, and anyone's writing a distributed system, as soon as the database runs in a separate process to their, you know, their website or whatever, actually, you know, retrying is a really valid way of curing a huge number of errors, just because you've got a deadlock in the system or your network had a transient error, and can be really valuable. Circuit breaker is another type of policy. Again, we were explaining earlier, essentially this notion of a circuit breaker on, say, electrical system that says, okay, I'm going to run most of the time in close, but I'll open in the event of a fault, and I can get a half open to let one through. And so we can build these kind of quality of service concerns. Now, you can write your own, because they're just handlers, you can write your own. I don't want to get into that particularly right now, but you can write your own handler, and you just create your own attribute. And then what we really do at runtime is we interrogate all those attributes and say, what handler implements this attribute, and we pass through some of the data you set in the parameters of the attribute through to your handler when we spin up an instance for you.
The thing I like about this is that you're actually thinking about when it breaks, how do I want to respond?
Right, exactly.
And I think too often when we write stuff, we're just like, oh, this is always going to work.
Yeah.
And then when it doesn't, you can incur some problems. And so this helps you a little bit with that.
Right, so classic, you know, sort of problems on not doing this stuff right is either that you're flooding the other system, you're not taking account of the fact that you may get a transient error you could have fixed to there, or for example, one of the things we commonly talk about is, you know, you need to time out. Sometimes you get a legacy bit of code, we've got a handler that helps you time out stuff that doesn't have a timeout built into it, because you don't want to be consuming a thread in your application for some service that's never going to respond to you.
Right.
And if you can't talk to that thing with a timeout, and then retry if it actually fails in a timeout, you can stock up all sorts of problems for your application, which are caused by something else that you were calling, and that's really going to take you down.
Right.
So the other thing we do is we say, well, look, you know, this is a really simple model where effectively we say, this handler, I'm gonna send a request to it. So I can show you, we have a web framework we're using to actually call this called OpenRaster. It's another open source project. It's very, very similar to Web API. So if you just don't know it, think Web API, because that's all you need to know. So what we've got here is a REST API, and it's sort of operations on it. But you can see on the post here for add task, we're actually going to say, okay, send that message across. So you can see what we're doing. We're saying parameters come in on the post, the entity body. We'll turn that into a command, and we'll send that via a command processor. It'll run that pipeline for us, and jobs are good. Right?
I see.
Now, we also have, in this particular endpoint, which is called the task reminder. Now, what we want to do in this, the idea here is we're saying, well, hey, I want to remind you that you failed to deal with a task. I'm going to send you an email. And I'm going to actually use SendGrid and Azure to go and do that for you, right? But, you know, actually, that takes quite a bit of time. And I don't really want my API to be hanging around for a long period of time while I go and make those calls to the external system. You know, you may have a rule. We have one that's about, say, 300 milliseconds for an API to respond in. Lots of folks have to get down to 100 milliseconds for a synchronous call. So we're saying, well, if anything's longer than that, why don't we actually do that work asynchronously? Now, you could go and write code with, you know, the TPL or async away, and you could spin up some threads to do that work. But there's some complexities there around what happens if things fail, you know, can I get a guaranteed delivery of that, et cetera. So what we prefer to do is say, well, why don't we send it to another process over a queue? So why don't we use some middleware to do it? That middleware can handle all the responsibility of saying, well, I will make sure that it eventually gets delivered to a service on the other side. It might not be running right now, but you know, when it does come up and it runs, it will take the message and it will do delivery for you. So what we say is, well, we're going to just do post, right? Very similar to send. And in fact, you know, there's a use case we think about quite a lot where we say, well, you could actually start running it in process and then decide, hey, that's too expensive. I'm going to make it post, and I'll put it actually in a separate window service.
And that's cool because, I mean, there's certain, like sending an email. I'm not expecting the email to like happen right when I push the button on the website. Right. And so there's certain things that, like, it's just going to take some time. Like when you upload pictures and you want to process, you're not going to want to do it synchronously. You might as well just send a message out and have it done.
Yeah, and you know, there's quite a lot of operations where, I mean, in stuff that we do at Huddle, where we have a real expectation that the user sits there and thinks, well, that's not an instant operation, right? I expect that to take some time to happen, and I'll get notified at some point that that has completed, and that's perfectly within my expectation of what I think software should be able to do.
So where do the messages get posted?
Right. So when I post, actually, what happens here, we go out to a broker. So we tend to use a broker topology for our messaging. So we use RabbitMQ. The Q today is the one we support, but we're looking at supporting other AMQP protocol ones, like, for example, Azure Service Bus. I also have a very, please don't use in production, lightweight implementation of a thing called REST-MS, which was Peter Hitchens, the guy behind AMQP, wrote an HTTP version, which has languished in obscurity. I dug it out of obscurity. And it's a way for us of proving that we can actually use these kind of broker models in different approaches. So we talk about internally about channels, and then we basically have an implementation for a given message broker. So what happens is you send them out to the Rabbit broker, and you get a topic, and then the subscribers say, I want to subscribe to that topic. And so they set up a channel and they subscribe. So each channel can have, you can broadcast essentially your recipient list. You can say, hey, multiple people are interested in this message when I send it out. And they can then consume that queue. We also have a model called competing consumers comes into play there as well, which says if that queue is very busy, you can have multiple services all reading that one channel to basically to distribute the work amongst themselves. So it's a way of scaling up by this model called competing consumers. There's a good explanation of that on our site. But here, this, for example, what happens is, just to show you this, when we basically do this post, our actual handler is, we just put it in a library. We've got a library of all of our kind of handlers. And it looks just like any other handler, right? There's no real difference from your point of view as the user. And our goal is really to make it very straightforward for any given, for the application developer, because they don't have to deal with the infrastructure of making calls across the message queue. They just say, hey, what I care about is implementing my handler, doing the work that I need to my application. And really, I just want these things to work, right? So it is this kind of notion of location transparency. I don't really care where that handler is. Now, obviously, you do care a little bit, because actually posting something means Well, it's going over a queue, so it's not synchronous. So it's going to take a while to happen. So we want to surface that by distinguishing between send and post and say, you should be aware that you're doing this over a queue, but you don't want to have to deal with the infrastructure of doing that work.
And I like that because it's like, you need to know what's happening. So with post, you know you're going to a queue. With send, you know it's going to go some. What's the difference between post and send other than the
queue? Send is synchronous in process.
Got it.
Post is basically across processes via the queue.
It's going to happen.
Otherwise, the models are the same. You can see this handle has got the whole set of attributes. And what's really happening on the far side is we have an instance of our kind of command processor on the far side. And I think we call a dispatcher that's just reading information off the queue and farming out the messages, which is then being found in the normal way.
Got it.
So we just hide that all that complexity from you. We do the work for you, really.
That's cool. So where can we go to find out more, download, or get started?
Okay, so you can go to GitHub, and you can get hold of Brighter on GitHub, right? So we have a project called Paramount. I have a strange... You need to have naming schemes, right, for your repositories. So I have a kind of Rock Band and a poor Rock Band kind of naming scheme. You can even find this in Nickelback repository. Nobody shoot me.
Nice.
But you can go and get Brighter there. And then we have essentially a documentation site, which you can link to from there, just a GitHub static website. And you can find this useful. The tutorials there for some of the really basic examples. They've got a whole lot of how-tos. The how-tos are really your go-to point for understanding how to basically go and build something. We do have a classic, real, we document our API. Don't start there, because that's kind of easy to look stuff up. And the easy way to use that is actually it's just, you know, IntelliSense will give you that information.
Right.
So don't dig into that. Just use the how-tos. And then, obviously, we're available on NuGet. We've got a little sticker somewhere, I'm sure. Basically, we're available on NuGet somewhere. That's my NuGet package link on. Oh, there we go.
There it is.
Yeah. And then we do have actually a Getter chat as well, if you want to talk to any of the guys. And we're probably, somebody will be around most of the time. We're also, you know, people want to participate.
Mm-hmm.
We're all, as a project, we're really happy to, people can raise issues, just with problems they have, or take pull requests. We love to see, you know, contributors. If you want to get involved in open source, it's a fairly straightforward project to get your head around, and I think it's very approachable for most people. So if people want to contribute, that's great. We're always looking for things, for example, like, you know, people to go away and look at implementing different brokers and integrating this with those stacks. So if you have a broker that we're not working on right now that you want to see, hey,
put it up there. Pull request. Well,
exactly.
Thanks so much for taking the time for showing us.
Thanks for listening, sir. It's great.
So thanks for watching. There's tons of great stuff happening in the .NET open source community. Brighter is one of the great examples. So thanks so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.